Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @RightStream and hashtag #RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Right Stream Tuesday. I'm your guest host, Declan Finn. For reasons I'm not privy to, Daria Ann could not make it tonight. Basically, she has a life, so she went out and found someone who didn't. So, here I am. If you are new to RightStream, I am the author of the anti-Dan Brown novel, A Pious Man, pious, spelled like the Pope, and I've also written a sci-fi espionage novel that brings new meaning to the phrase, term limits. For tonight's guest, we have Karina Fabian. She is an editor and author. She's created Dragon Private Eyes, Zombie Exterminators, Catholic Aliens, Interstellar Rescue Nuns. She has served as a signal officer for the United States Air Force, married to a United States Air Force colonel. And she is also the founder, or at least, well, one of the founders, of the Catholic Writers Guild, which is a very colorful bunch of people. Anyway, so she'll be calling in about 4 to 5 minutes. We'll see exactly how well that works. And with luck, I will not screw up this entire broadcast too badly. So I'm not sure if anyone's been looking around the internet today, but it's been a little bit weird. For example, I'm looking at the American Journal. For those of you who want to read along with me, that's the-american-journal.com. Good Lord, some of the stuff going on today. If any one of you folks out there has read Tom Clancy, he did one book called Command Authority, came out just after he died, all about, Russia invading Ukraine. Gee whiz, what's Russia doing to Ukraine right now? Also, a few years back, he had a book called SSN, which was about the wonderful world of submarine warfare. Turned into a video game, and the plot of that one centered around the wonderful world of China invading the South China Sea, going up against its neighbors like Japan. So, today in the news, what happens? Russia and China sign a $400 billion oil agreement. Yep. This is how well sanctions work. Russia doesn't get play well with the West. It gets to play well with the East. And, of course, China was quite happy to go along with it because, recently the Obama Department of Justice decided to indict, in quotation marks, several Chinese military hackers in absentia for hacking U.S. businesses. Why were they indicted? Because they're not going to be prosecuted. Welcome to hashtag politics. The Obama administration can at least say they're doing something. Well, congratulations. They did something. They made China and Russia good and dear friends. Yay. Also, later on, to celebrate, they're going to be having the Chinese and the Russians are going to be having combined naval exercises in the South China Sea. No, that's not intimidating at all, is it? So, that's one bit of idiocy around the world right now. I'm not sure if anyone else has been keeping track of, I don't know, what are they calling him? The Memorial Day weekend shooter? Valentine shooter? Something along those lines. Stabs 3 people, shoots 3 people, takes himself out. And, whoops, red alert, we've got the entire anti-gun lobby going insane. So, funny. You know, it was anti-gun state, anti-gun laws, anti-gun area, took out half his kills with a knife, and somehow it's the NRA's fault. I'm still trying to figure that one out. Oh, well. Anyway. All right. For those of you who want to call in, the number is 347-945-7246. If you'd like to call in at any point during the show. So, don't worry. You will not be left out for any reason. Unless, of course, I fail to multitask a simple chat screen and a simple switchboard that literally just has a drop screen of numbers. So, anyway, let's go around the rest of the stupidity. Oh, yes, more from the American Journal. I'm not sure. Does anyone know the name Senator Bernie Sanders, socialist from Vermont? Oh, I'm sorry. It has an I after his name, so I guess that means he's an independent. I would have sworn people in Vermont would even vote for a socialist, but, oh well, I guess he can't say that out loud, and even in the Democratic Party. So, for those of you who might have been keeping track, last week the House voted on a bill to make it easier to fire senior VA officials involved in the health care scandal. You might remember this from the fact that they killed 40 veterans out by putting them on a quote-unquote secret waiting list. You put them on the secret waiting list and, oh gee, the wait times look remarkably short because they're not putting them on the official wait list until the wait time is within 1 to 2 weeks. Welcome to standard bureaucracy. This bureaucracy got 40 vets killed that we know of. So, the House voted to make it easier to fire these schlubs. The VA Management Accountability Act passed 390 votes to 33. The 33 are, of course, Democrats. So, now it goes on to the Senate. And, of course, we have Bernie Sanders. Quote, while Sanders agrees with many pieces of the House bill, the Senate has not held a hearing on it. Some of us are old-fashioned enough to know that maybe folks in the Senate might want to know what is in the bill before we voted on it. Really? Since when do Democrats actually read bills before they vote on it? Wasn't it Nancy Pelosi who said we gotta pass the bill to see what's in it? Ah, the difference that a few years makes. Oh, well. However, I have no problem with that. Read it all you like. I mean, heck, what's so hard about that? The bill is exactly 3 pages long. Three, count them. 1, 2, 3. So, that's a coffee break. A lunch hour? Heck, take the Memorial Day weekend. After all, the House passed it last Wednesday. Nope, sorry. Sanders said he would hold a hearing on the bill when the Senate returns in late June. Full hearings. Late June. This isn't Tolstoy. This isn't Tom Clancy. It's not even James Patterson. It's 3 whole pages. I've read minute mysteries that were longer than this bill. In the 5 weeks it'll take to even have the hearing, the VA can probably kill a few dozen more people. Oh, well. They're only vets, right? Oh, for the love of God. Sorry, there are some days where I just want to beat my head against the wall, or maybe beat somebody else's head against the wall, but I'm in New York, they're in D.C., and drive is too darn long. Granted, with the weights coming out of LaGuardia and JFK, it'll probably be quicker to drive. Anyway, so how else can we entertain you good folks for a few minutes before Karina calls? What other idiocies are out in the world right now? Oh, yeah, I almost forgot this one. Don't know how. Sunday. Does everyone know what a chief of station is in intelligence terms? A chief of station is basically, think of it as the precinct captain, if we're talking cops, where, okay, he runs out of the embassy, that sort of thing, runs every spy in the area, and simple as that. However, Sunday, Obama went into Afghanistan to meet with the troops. Very Memorial Day photo op. They released a list of who was at the meeting. That and one of the people listed happened to be, surprise, the chief of station. So, we've just basically burned a spook. Very nice, Obama. Now, okay, fine. Stuff happens, right? Oh, wait. This is the third chief of station. Sorry. The fourth chief of station in the Middle East who have been blown by the White House. So, does the phrase operational security mean anything over here? I mean, good God. They're starting to make the Keystone Cops look like Delta Force. Anyway, enough of me talking. Mercy has come to all of you folks. We got a caller. Since I can't screen, I'm going to go live now. Caller, Karina?
No, it's Anne Margaret Lewis. How you doing, Declan?
I'm doing fine, Anne. Okay, for those of you who do not know Anne, you really should. Okay. Short version, we have another author, also a member of the Catholic Writers Guild, who has written, oh, good God. I'll start with Murder in the Vatican, The Church Mysteries of Sherlock Holmes. Let's put it this way. If you're going through Benedict Cumberbatch withdrawal or you're waiting for the next Robert Downey Jr. movie, I don't think anyone's desperate enough to wait for Johnny Lee Miller, go out to Amazon, find Anne Margaret Lewis, and get Murder in the Vatican. Now. Right now. And you can do this while you listen to me. Just go out and buy it. You won't be sorry. I promise you. Anyway, so, Anne, welcome aboard.
Hi there. Can I help you out? Can you give you some conversation while we wait for Karina? Karina is an old friend of mine, and I know she's in the process of moving. So the push is without internet access right now. I don't know if that's just affecting the whole communication problem or not, but I know that she is in the process of shifting her domicile at this present moment. So, Ben, maybe what's going on? Yeah.
Well, I
didn't text her saying you got to call in now. So we'll see.
Well, funny you should mention that because. Well, how would you like to be on the panel, Anne? We've got, Karina's number coming up right in the switchboard.
Yay! You can be on the panel. It'd be fine. She knows she and I are also always playing tag team.
Okay, and Karina, you're live in, well, now. Now? Hello?
Oh, hello!
Hallelujah, it works! Praise be Jesus! How are you?
I am so sorry. We were trying to figure out the gas.
Oh, not a problem. I can talk for hours.
This morning my husband says, we tried the stove and it works, and then the water heater won't work. Now the stove won't work. It's because they never turned on the gas. And I have to discover it. So we're trying to figure out how to cook dinner. And I went, oh no. So thank you. Thank you for covering.
It sounds
like she's in a big empty room, doesn't it?
I agree. You have to read Anne's books. Murder in the Vatican, and coming soon, Watson Chronicles, because they are awesome. Doesn't matter what genre you like, these are fantastic books, and if you like home, you will love her books.
Oh, well, your guys are sweet. Thank you so much. and you'll love Karina's too, and Declan's, and Karina's crazy.
Oh, no, more than the rest of us.
And then more than the rest of us, it's true. I love her Dragon Detective Verne. He's like my favorite. And actually, I started brainstorming a story where Verne meets Holmes. We got to write that sometime, Karina.
We do. That would be really fun. They would get on each other's nerves. Too much ego.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember either one of you two displaying an overabundance of ego. In fact, I suggested...
No. I mean Holmes and Verne.
Oh. Holmes and Verne would, yes, they would be like having a little contest there.
Oh, yes.
We're whipping out the measuring sticks and whatever. I don't know.
Verne wouldn't have to whip out a measuring stick. He's got a dragon knot. Please. Really? You had to measure that.
So many jokes, and none of them I can say on the air.
Nope, none of them we can say on the air. No.
Okay.
But anyway, Karina, I'm sorry I came in. I called in to fill in for you.
I appreciate it.
Did you get my text?
That's the great thing. I tell you about the Catholic Writers Guild. That's the other great thing, is that we are all there for each other.
That's right.
Okay, well, I didn't come prepared for a panel, but if you'd both like to hang around, I'd be happy to work with both of you.
We can do it.
I'll jump in whenever. Go ahead and ask Karina her questions, and I'll be the peanut gallery.
Okay, I was going to ask Karina if I missed anything in the bio, but she wasn't here for the bio, so... Anyway.
You know what? I'll bet it was beautiful. I'll bet it was just a work of art, and that people were just crying tears of joy and thrilling. I'm a pretty basic person. It's my books that are so much fun.
I don't know about that. I think you're quite colorful enough. And no, I don't mean that as, you know, I don't mean that as a euphemism for bat guano insane, but anyway. So
I said like colorful metaphors. Those of us who are old enough to remember Star Trek Save the Whales.
Even I'm old enough to remember Star Trek Save the Whales, but then again, I got it on VHS.
I love Star Trek Save the Whales. Yes, he had too much LDS in the 1960s.
That's
anyway.
Right. Now I live in Utah. I'm getting plenty of LDS.
Yeah, there's a different meaning for LDS, yes.
Are you
going to ask her about her zombie exterminators, her Catholic aliens, or her interstellar rescue nuns?
Well, I don't know. Well, let's start with the zombie exterminators, although now that you live out in Utah, and with all the blonde-haired, blue-eyed, smiley, happy people, how can you tell the difference between them and zombies?
Now, you know what? Utah is actually the geekiest state in the Union.
Yes,
really.
Study done of different social media and things. Comic-Con, when they first chose Salt Lake for Comic-Con, they were like, oh, well, you know, this isn't going to do so good. And they totally filled the Salt Palace, overflowing. The fire marshal was worried. And most of those people were from Utah, so it's been pretty cool. In fact, we moved here, and... this is a big move for us. It's like 5 miles from where we were living. But our neighbors came. They saw the truck. They came over to say hello. And then the next day, because, you know, most of our neighbors are Mormon and the church is right across the street from us, they announced in church that we were here. And so we've had neighbors coming to say hello and that kind of thing, which is one thing I love about Utah. It's a very friendly state. But one of the guys said, Your husband was in space, and you're a sci-fi writer. There are more geeks in the neighborhood, yes! So it's people are just like, yeah, zombies. They're all for it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, so for those of you who haven't done the pre-show prep that we posted up on the website, the book Nita Life, Zombie Exterminator, here's the Amazon flap copy. By the 2040s, the shambling dead have become an international problem. While governments and special interest groups vie for the most environmentally friendly way to rid the world of zombies, a new breed of exterminator has arisen, the zombie exterminator. When zombie exterminator Nita Life gets sued because a zombie she sets afire stumbles onto a lawyer's back porch, she needs money. Fast. So she agrees to train apprentice exterminators in a reality TV show that makes Survivor look like a game of tag. But that's nothing compared to having to deal with crazy directors, bickering contestants, and paparazzi. Can she keep her ratings up, her bills paid, and her apprentices alive and still keep her sanity? I'm betting no. But anyway, for the audience, I can verify that this was a fun book. And for the record, I hate zombie media. Come to think of it,
yeah, me too. I'm not a big zombie person either, and I loved her book. Sorry, I didn't mean to interject. Go ahead.
No.
It's okay. You know what? Before I wrote this book, I didn't like zombies either. I actually wrote this because Kim Richards, the publisher of Damnation Books, was just starting that press, and she wanted to do an anthology of zombie stories called The Zombie Cookbook. And she was, I know her from another writing group, and she was begging us to write her zombie stories so that she could fill this thing. And I was like, no, sorry, I'm not really into zombies. I was like, if I think of something. And then one of my friends who was also writing for the book came to me and said, you need to write a story for Kim. She's waiting. She needs a story. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And so I wrote this little story called Walking Dead, W-O-K-K-I-N-G. Basically, it's Nita Life taking out an infestation in a Korean restaurant. And the zombies are being all crazy and silly while she's trying to take them all out. And, you know, one is doing art with the rice, and she's not really into pointillism herself. She's more of a, you know, impressionistic and clown with her chainsaw. And it was so much fun. Then somebody asked if I would do a novel with Nita. And I was like, you know, actually she was kind of fun to write. So I did this. And the zombies are not your usual shambling dead. They're really more for the pratfalls. They're semi-intelligent. They are creatures of the habits that they developed in their life. You can distract them with television. If they are Muslim and you throw bacon in their way, they will avoid it. If you smoke, if they were non-smokers in life, they will politely cough as they give you a clear circle. So they do very silly things. And so then it's a very creative way of, number one, poking fun at a lot of human habits and things, but also it's a lot of fun to find creative ways to be able to distract them, to take them out, and that kind of thing. And that's what I've had the most fun doing with the Nita Life stories. And then Nita just turned out to be such a fun character, trying to deal with all of the insanity of being in Hollyweird and actually trying to have a serious reality TV show with the director who was able to make a top show out of nails, you know, painting nails. That was his first. Manny Petty was his first reality TV show, and it became such a hit because he found a way to make drama out of that. So now he's trying to make drama, and she's trying to avoid the drama. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to put together.
Yes, because, you know, trying to not get killed by zombies is so drama-free.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there goes
the How could she avoid drama when she's on a reality show?
Well, because
I just sit there wondering.
Nina's a very generally laid back, calm, get the job done, and that's what I'm here for. Whereas Dave, the director, was, okay, you threw the napalm bomb, run 10 feet and dive dramatically to the ground. Like, screw that, I'm going to keep running until I know he's not following me.
Yes. Does make you wonder if the people who do American Idol would probably try directing people in a war zone. Wait, no, sorry, that was John Kerry's career in Vietnam. Never mind. Anyway, now, by the way, you set this one in L.A. How do you tell the difference between the hordes of zombies and L.A. citizens?
Zombies are more predictable.
Okay. Just checking. Anyway, now, I noticed, now, I've read, hold on, 1, 2, 3, 4, let's say 5 different series you've got. I can honestly tell you this was the most political one. You've got geopolitical issues, zombies in Iran, environmental idiots at the EPA with environmentally friendly zombie hunting. The sequel has eco-terrorists. Did this just happen? Was this for any particular reason?
I was living in California at the time.
Oh.
So there was a little bit of reaction to that. And, you know, it's just, I don't ever sit down and go, I think I will write a story that has this, that, and the other, right? I usually come up with a character, a situation, I stuff them together and let them run. And so that's pretty much how it just turned out. And, well, quite frankly, there's so much in the social political spectrum to make good comedy out of. So it was an easy thing to write.
I hear you. I'm much the same way when I write. How about you, Andy? Are you a plotter, or are you just, okay, these are the plots, here are the characters, I'm just going to run with them and see how they go?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, sometimes I have an idea. Like, for instance, if I'm actually writing a mystery story, I'm like Watson Chronicle. It's kind of funny. Between you talked about the two different books I wrote that are both Sherlock Holmes. The first one, I at least know who did it, you know, and I know the ending. And sometimes things happen in the middle that I didn't plan. So it's like writing Murder in the Vatican is 3 stories that are short stories. And in the second one, Murder in Vatican Canyons, suddenly Holmes turns the corner and there's a dead body there. And I didn't plan on that dead body being there. He just sort of showed up. So I said, well, there's a dead body there. I said, Holmes better look at it. You know, so sometimes your characters go off and do things that aren't exciting. I'm like, okay, well, where'd that dead body come from? I didn't plan that dead body. So there are sometimes, you know, things come and show up. So every book is different, I think, with me. Sometimes I know where I'm going with it. Sometimes I don't. And it just sort of goes. And I think that would be frustrating for we have a mutual friend, Matt Bowman, who edits books and stuff like that. And he has this little outline of how books are supposed to be put together in a novel. And actually, he's right. It does work. You have to have those certain turns at certain points and stuff like that. I don't think any of my books match it. it just sort of ends up going where the characters lead you, you know. Watson Chronicles is one of those. I think Watson Chronicles. I kind of knew what I wanted to go with Watson Chronicles 2, but I wasn't expecting it to go the way it did. And okay. it sort of happened in the middle of that of Murder in the Vatican. Actually, I had this idea for a whole other book, and I went and wrote Watson Chronicles, and then came back and finished Murder in the Vatican. So it's like, and Karina was through all this whole process. By the way, she read both of them, watched them. And weren't you working on another one? I was like, oh, by the way, yeah, it was kind of.
It was more like, yay, she's working on another one.
So, anyway, so it, do I plot it? A little bit, I do a little bit of both. This is basically a short answer to your question, even though I took around the way to answer it.
Not a problem. Hey, my job as host is to let you folks talk. So, anyway, I've been talking for 30. You've been talking for 15. You want to take a break? You want to keep going? Because I'm good for hours without shutting up.
I don't know. Do we have calls coming in? Do we have questions from folks or anything?
Nope, not that I can see.
Well, then let's keep talking. We may only be talking to ourselves, but that's okay. And people, call us in. Ask us questions.
Okay, now back to you, Karina. With Nita, the first zombie exterminator came out in 2010, and this year you've got the audio book. Could I ask why it took so long, or should I not?
Well, this is actually the second audiobook that Damnation Books has put out, and so the reason is because she's a new press, getting herself established, and is now branching out into the audio realm. And so I'm really very honored that she chose mine so quickly, because she's got a lot of great books, and frankly, I think some of them probably sell better than mine. I tend to be a little bit of a niche. Can you imagine that? Comedic horror. But, yeah, she loves the book. I love the book. And it was fun to read. I had so much fun with Becky Geist, who is the voice talent, because for the first week or two as she was getting into it, she'd call me up and go, okay, what does Gordon sound like? And, how is this for Nita? What do you think about her voice? And how do you say this name? And there were some sections that were kind of funny because I never wrote this book intending to have it in audio. I mean, I always read my books out loud to my kids as part of my proofreading process, and I love doing it. But there were some sections that part of the jokes came from the fact that they were written. I have a whole forum section. And so we had to figure out how are we going to do the forum in a voice forum. And I think she did really well. So I'm very excited to have it out. And I'm really wishing that we could put it in, like, every truck stop in America, because this would be the tape to be listening to when you are driving at night on that big, long stretch of highway.
Considering how Nita life ends, the climax of the book on the highway, I'm not sure if there are truckers who want that particular ending in the dead of night.
As long as they're not carrying organic blue cheese dressing, they're probably safe. For those that don't know, at the very end, one of the things that zombies in my book are attracted to are smells that aren't always the nicest, but whatever's very pungent, which is why the lawyer's house was being attacked by zombies, was because he had pickled herring and other things out in the California sun during a picnic, and his house is right against the cemetery. So needless to say, he attracted quite a few unwanted guests. But in the thing, a government motors entitlement cuts off a truck which is carrying organic blue cheese dressing, which then rolls, spilling the contents, the glass breaks, and the stench is there, and it's right next to what they call a roach hotel, which is a gathering spot for zombies that the government just kind of watches, because it's better just to have them all, they tend to gather there and then just stay. But when something like this happens, then they all come trolling out because they're attracted by the smell. And so Nita and her team have to go out, and it's pretty much eight of them plus some emergency personnel against 250 zombies. Dave, the director, was in paroxysms of joy.
250 zombies sounds like nights in some areas of Brooklyn. Okay.
That's what's right. That's
right. Yeah, 4th of July, heck, we had fireworks.
Flatbush.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that works. That works. Anyway, so, well, you pretty much answered my question about getting an audiobook together. And since I've got both. Well, now, generally on WriteStream, Daria likes to ask about marketing. So this is for both of you. Do you do anything in particular for yours, for your marketing campaigns?
Do you want to start, Karina?
I normally do a book tour, blogging, where different friends or book blogs and that kind of thing will host me, and I will do an interview or a guest post, or they'll post the information, that kind of thing. I have done signings in the past, but signings are more just getting out there and kind of meeting the readers and hoping that you can make personal connection rather than selling the books. And so it's a fun thing to do, but I haven't done a lot of them lately. Quite frankly, this past year or so with everything that's been going on in my life, it's been crazy. I haven't done that much as far as marketing. I've mostly been doing what I consider the most important part of marketing, which is writing the next book.
Okay.
Now, as for marketing for me, I mean, I pretty much take Karina's lead on this to do a blog tour for the book and do some promotion online, certainly Facebook and Twitter and things like that. I haven't had a chance to do it yet with Watson Chronicles. Long story on that one. I'm waiting for it to be released on Amazon. Once it's released on Amazon, then I'll promote it. So, but yeah, I plan to kind of follow the Karina model of marketing. That's what I call it, the Karina model. I also do some book signings, but it's at shows where it makes sense for me to do it, like Sherlock Holmes shows and things like that.
Okay.
So, I mean, I did my first book signing for Watson Chronicles out at in New York City for the Baker Street Irregulars weekend. That made a lot of sense to do that.
Yes, I had heard about that only after the entire event was over. So, oh, well.
Yeah.
Well. Mm-hmm. So,
long story.
Yeah. Yes. For the record, I have read the Watson Chronicles, ladies and gentlemen, and, okay, Murder in the Vatican was pure Arthur Conan Doyle-style awesome, only she writes better than Arthur Conan Doyle, and Watson Chronicles put Murder in the Vatican in the dust. I'll post a review as soon as the rest of the world can actually get it on Amazon. No,
yeah.
And if you could tell your publisher that you got a public lambasting by a radio host, that would speed things along. Be my guest.
Maybe. I will talk to them.
Okay. Anyhow. Now I noticed that in both of your marketing plans, both of you don't seem to bother all that much with quote-unquote, social media. I don't count the blogs in this one. You know, you don't sound big on Facebook, Twitter, that sort of thing.
No, I kind of just, I do social media all the time naturally anyways, and a lot of the social media is in the blog tour. I haven't had the opportunity yet, but the next time I do a tour, I'd like to do, a Twitter a tweet chat, that's what it's called, sorry. Do the tweet chat. I'm a real dinosaur sometimes. I still haven't gotten the hang of the Google Hangout thing. but I want to try one of those. So
I do want to try something on LinkedIn as well. I know that LinkedIn's kind of a different kind of social media platform, so that's something I want to try. I do, when you got that blog tour going on, I do Facebook and tweet everything as it comes mm-hmm. out, so it does go on several different methods of social media, but the basis of course is the blog. I don't know. I do think there you can go ahead and promote it on Facebook. A lot of that is the time, that's all. Taking the time to get it all put together and have those social media tweets and posts come out in a regular fashion in order to promote it. You know what I'm saying? I also don't want to annoy the friends on my list if I promote it too much. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of trying to be.
It's definitely about. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's only so much you can do before it becomes spamming.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Exactly.
Okay. All right, then. I guess that question's wrapped up. Unless, Karina, you want to add something?
I have tried a lot of different things, and I tried doing paid ads. Actually, one of my publishers and I tried it early on, and we found that we didn't get back what we were putting in. I've tried newsletters, and I kind of got to a certain point, and then it wasn't growing from there. And so probably... one of these miracle days when I have a little more time and I will reevaluate what I'm doing. But in the meantime, I'm having fun. My books are fun. And I really think that the best marketing is word of mouth, which really comes from writing a great story and catching those magic people that will go and tell their friends who tell their friends. So, and I haven't yet figured out where those magic people for me are lying in wait, but I have a few, like Anne and you. But they say that if you can get 1,000 early adopters, the early adopters are the ones who get really, crazy fanatic. Oh, my gosh, it's the latest Sabian. I have to tell 75 of my closest friends. Let me blast this chapter by chapter on Facebook. That kind of thing. If you can get 1,000 of those kind of fans, then you take off. That's what the saying is. I think I probably have 200. Which is nice, and I love them all very much. So,
I'm sure they're happy to hear that.
Until the rest of those 800 get on board, I'll be putting along and having fun. I'm working on a story that a friend asked me to do. I just finished a trilogy, the Mind Over trilogy, which is about a young man who's psychic. And his abilities pretty much drove him insane. And in the first book, he's finding his way back to sanity with the help of a young intern. And the young intern falls in love with one of the nurses. In the second novel, Daryl, my psychic, escapes from the asylum, teleporting, taking Joshua, who is the intern, with him to another planet. And then the whole second book is about Daryl finding his home among these psychic people on this other planet. And Joshua's kind of there and a little bit lost, but he's there to keep Daryl grounded and also to save both Daryl and the alien woman that Jenna falls in love with from going insane. So, which is a way long story. It's a whole novel's worth of why that happens. But, you know, the whole time, he's newly in love and he's missing his girlfriend and all of that kind of thing and wondering if he'll ever see her again because he's stuck on this alien planet. In the third novel, Daryl has brought him back. And now Daryl comes and gets him and Satchko, Joshua's fiance, and takes them back to help him save the whole planet and the neighboring planet besides. You never think you can escalate. You can always escalate. So so it's quite a thing. They're saving the world. And as they think they're really going to die, Joshua asks Satchko if she would please set a date for their wedding. He gets to have something to live for. And it ends with them going to get married. So one of my fans, who's a good friend too, said, "I can't believe you didn't marry them off! Where's the wedding?" So I'm writing the wedding story now. Which is turning into quite an ordeal, because Satchko is an intern is a neurosurgeon, and 3 days before the wedding, one almost dies on the table. She brings him back. He almost dies again. She brings him back, and her mentor is basically saying, "Well, you've just doomed this guy to being a vegetable, and his wife to having to deal with a vegetable and 7 kids. You know, hey, have a great wedding." And so she's dealing with that. And then her cousins take Joshua on a bachelor party, get him stupid drunk, put him on their boat to try him for crimes against bachelorhood. And somebody watching through the window thinks that it's a lynching because Joshua's black. So they call the police. The police storm the boat. Joshua falls off the boat. And so she ends up leaving her bachelorette party to go because her half-drowned fiancé is in the hospital. So she deals with a lot of stuff, and this was not intended. This is another one of those you throw them in the situation, and, gee, look what happens. And this all started because in the very first story, the very first novel, I don't think I even put it in the novel, but Daryl wanted to tell Joshua, don't get drunk on your bachelor party. Don't go on a boat. Do anything else you want. Don't go on the boat drunk. And he never did get to tell him. Through all three novels, he never told him that. So now this is what Joshua has to deal with, and it's all Daryl's fault. I'm so sorry.
You know, it's really funny, Karina. You're writing about a guy falling off a boat. That's one thing that actually did happen to me in my life.
To what? Really?
I fell off a boat. I was 4.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even tell people, hey, I fell off the boat. I really did. what happened was I was trying to jump between the boat and the dock. I was 4 years old. I was so eager to get on a boat that to get off the boat or something. I can't remember if I was getting on or getting off. I can't remember. But I fell between the boat and the dock. And and my dad's friend grabbed me by the leg and pulled me back out. It was a very deep boating lake, and I was drenched and shivering and enjoying myself on this trip on the boat. But yes, I have fallen off a boat before. So I thought that was pretty funny that you have him falling off the boat.
Yeah, quite a thing. He was drunk. They had him tied.
That will wake him up
over his head, because they were all that silly themselves, but they knew, you know, we're not going to let this guy fall off because he's kind of drunk and he's going to be standing right there on the edge of the boat while we yell at him for being a bachelor. And when the police come, they tell him let go of the rope, and they did, and he fell. So It shouldn't be as funny as I make it, because I mean, I can't imagine how scary that would be to have a bag over your head, be tied up, and then fall into the water that you didn't even know was there. So, in fact, when he actually wakes sober, he has a panic attack because he realizes he almost drowned, and he's hydrophobic to begin with.
What are you going to do with that story, Karina? Are you going to try?
Well, I haven't decided yet. I may talk to the publisher about just tacking it on at the end or making it a freebie if you buy the book. Or I may stick it on Amazon, just self-publish it as a novella. I've done a couple of self-publishing things. I have one Dragon Eye novella. So if anybody is looking for a gateway to Dragon Eye, you can go and check out Greater Treasures, which is a short serious story with Vern and Sister Grace.
As serious a short story as you can have with a dragon private investigator.
Yes. Who is a fedora?
Yes.
Okay.
Remind me, sometimes I get the plot lines mixed up, Green. Is that the one where Sister Grace ends up in the hospital?
Yes, that is the one.
Okay, I don't want to get into too much detail because I don't want to be a spoiler. But okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I like that story.
The Dragon Eye stories, Vern is a very versatile character. I mean, after all, he's a dragon. And he can wear a fedora. And he can make it look good. he's very versatile. He can do everything from the slapstick, like in Live and Let Fly, where he's having fun attacking minions, and he gets to be human for a while and gets into some embarrassing situations. So he can do all of that. And he could also do some very serious noir type fantasy mysteries. So it's one of the things I love about writing The Dragon Eyes. Is I never quite know where I'm going to end up with Vern. And talking about plotting versus fantasy, sometimes when I'm in the mood to write a Vern story and I don't quite know what I want to do, I will go and watch an old noir film and just take notes about the mystery and the plot progression and what happens, and then I'll stick Vern and Sister Grace in it. And, in fact, that's how I ended up with Greater Treasures. Is Greater Treasures is actually a Maltese Falcon, kind of nod to the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, since you write Dragon, should I be asking about your opinions on Smaug? Or, sorry, Cumber Smaug.
Cumber Smaug.
I love
the
him. Vern is terribly, terribly envious. He's gone and seen the movie many times, and he sighs every time he sees Smaug in the gold, and he wants a gold spa treatment just like Smaug had. So, yes, he's in the soft trouble. Grace is just like, do we have to see that movie again? And now it's out on DVD. It's one of the few things he's actually bought. He just goes that one scene, just the Smaug scene. He does agree Smaug is drama queen and is not using common sense against the hobbits. So he'd be like, you know, that scene would have been so much shorter, but then I would have missed.
Well, when you're a dragon who's been retired for 60 years, your aim gets a little off. Sorry, Anne, you were saying?
Sorry, this is totally off the beaten path. But Karina, are you in your new home right now?
I am.
Yeah, I'm wondering why the room sounds big and empty.
Yeah, that's exactly why. It's big. In fact, I'm in my study right now, and so there's a desk and a shelf. And the computer that I was going to have put together by now, but I got distracted by gas stoves that weren't working. So.
Anyway. Oh, by the way, since I brought up Cumberbatch. So, Anne, since you are the Sherlock Holmes guru, what do you think of the Holmesiana that's currently flooding the media?
Well, actually, it's good. It's good because, you know, you have, even though you have many different versions of Sherlock Holmes that are flying around out there, I mean, you've got Robert Downey Jr., who you know, I like Robert Downey Jr. I really do. I like him as an actor. I like him as, he seems to be a pretty, you know, actually I find him a likable fellow. Can I say that?
Yeah.
I sit there and I wonder, you know, you got him and you've got Buck Benedict coming back and you have other stuff coming out. What gets me, you're creating new readers for the original story. There's a whole young group of women, primarily girls, who are now really getting into Benedict Cumberbatch and then suddenly falling into reading the original stories, and then they go, hey, he's actually, you know, maybe a little different than we expect him to be, and it's actually still pretty cool. I think if you can get people to read those original stories, it's always a good thing. Oh, yes, I forgot about Elementary. Yeah, I forgot about Elementary, too.
Don't worry, it's forgettable.
I kind of watch it on and off. It's forgettable, but you know what? I watch it on and off. Definitely Miller, I like him as a Sherlock Holmes character. I would accept him if they were to throw him into Victorian time. I would accept him as a Sherlock Holmes. I would. But I don't always like the choices that they make on the television show. I have nothing against the female Watson. I like the actress. Oh gosh, what's her name now? I'm blanking.
Lucy Liu.
She was killed. Lucy Liu. Thank you very much. Yes, Lucy Liu. I like her. But I sit there and I don't see her as Watson. And I just see it as another procedural that has a really smart guy. You know? So, and actually, as far as police procedurals go, it's not too bad. So, for any of those shows and stuff like that, what I make of it is that it's getting more people to read the original stories, and that's always good.
Okay.
And eventually, maybe that, if they like to read the original, they'll read mine, so it's always a good thing, too.
Yeah, he's hoping. Okay. Now, we're coming up on the first hour mark, and Daria requested that I play a few bits of music during a break, so just to make sure she doesn't skin me alive, I'm going to start a break here. If neither one of you two ladies mind.
Although Anne could do it.
Okay. What? I'm going to put you both on mute. Hopefully you're both going to be in the waiting room if I do this right, and if I hang up on you, it wasn't done on purpose. Honest.
Sorry, you have to call back in. All right.
Yep. So, here we go. Mute, and on. On.
I took a flat to a pawn shop for a broken guitar. Took a flat to a pawn shop. How much is that guitar? I took a flat to a pawn shop. Got me that guitar. What's a flat in a pawn shop to me? I saw a man on the TV in a mask with a gun. A man on the TV, he had a 10-year-old son. I saw a man on the TV, his son had a gun. And he said that he's coming for me. I never cherished freedom. Freedom never cried. I wrote a song for a dead man to settle my soul. A song for a dead man, and now I'll never grow old. There's a baby on the doorstep, wailing away. There's a baby on the doorstep, longing for the day. There's a baby on the doorstep, who gives his life to take. A flag to a pawn shop, a flag to a pawn shop. May he forget why he is crying so dear.
Freedom Never Cries, a U.S. military tribute, something from Memorial Day. Hopefully, I can get everyone back. Is everyone back with
Hello?
Me?
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, yes. We're back.
Hello, I'm here.
Okay, so, round two. If you're just tuning in, this is guest host Declan Finn with the wonderful and Margaret Lewis, and the equally wonderful Karina Fabian. So, I keep hearing about this little thing in Chicago that we're all apparently going to be at.
Oh, don't make me cry. I can't go this year.
Ah, okay. My apologies.
Karina can't make it.
It's awesome. Yes, if you are a Catholic and a writer, this is the place to go this year.
Yes, the Catholic Writers Guild live conference, as opposed to the Undead conference, which I presume that's what it would be if Karina were hosting.
Hey.
So, either one of you two wish to talk about the wonders and joys of the Catholic Writers Guild?
Well, first of all, our conference is going to be... It's July, one of the days. It's the very last week in July. I'm looking at my information. Sometimes I remember the days, sometimes I don't. And I'm the one running it. Okay, it is July 30th through August 1st, 2014, at the Renaissance Chambord Convention Center in Chambord, Illinois. We work with the Catholic Marketing Network to put the show on, and it's our theme this year is perseverance. It's how to stick with it. And to that end, we've got some really good people who are coming to talk. We have Lisa Hendy from CatholicMom.com. She's going to be doing her keynote. We have, of course, Declan's going to be on our Action Adventure panel with award-winning science fiction author Gene Wolfe. And I don't know if you had a chance to read any of Gene Wolfe's material. He has been a published author for 47 years. Can you guys imagine that? 47 years. His first book came out in 1966. That's why I know. It's the year I was born. That's why I know it's been 47 years, because that's how old I am. So it's just astonishing to think how long his career's been. And he's like kind of in the realm of an Asimov or Bradbury, or he's like that level of author. And I was like so astonished with him again, because he lives in Peoria, and he's in his 80s. And when I told him, he's a Catholic convert and very devout, and I asked him if he'd come, and he said, "Well, I'm more interested in you than you probably would be in me," which is kind of funny, because the man he's won so many awards and stuff like that, but he's not what you'd call a best-selling author, because his writing is so wonderful. Let's see, who else do I have coming besides Gene? Gary Zemack from EWTN, Claudia Volkman, and who is an editor for Servant Books, Donna Marie Cooper of Well from EWTN also,
We have, Joseph Velasquez. Do you guys know who that is? She's a speaker who has, you guys have seen her on YouTube. She does a lot of talks and stuff like that on suffering and stuff. She is very, she can't gain weight. She's the young woman who can't gain weight. Have you guys seen this?
Nope.
Have you heard of her? Okay. I'll send you a link for her. Of course, John Desjardins is going to be doing a writing workshop. John Desjardins lives in Illinois. He's been one of our regulars. He writes mysteries also. So we've got some really great people who are going to be doing it. Of course, we have the Powers doing a fiction critique group. And so it's going to be really, really a good show.
Okay.
And if people are interested, they go to the Catholic Writers Conference.com for information on this.
Sure. Should I ask why the Chicago area?
Why the Chicago area? It's because we are traveling with the Catholic Marketing Network, and they travel to Chicago. I think that they've kind of decided what they're going to start doing is going between Chicago and New Jersey. So every other year it'll be, you know, every year it'll be, one year it'll be Chicago, next year it'll be Jersey, and back again. So they're kind of like going back and forth between the two, the Midwest and the North Coast, East Coast, as opposed to the West Coast, which is, you know, California. I don't know if they've ever done a show in California, but we travel with the Catholic Marketing Network, and they are a huge trade show of all sorts, everything that you could possibly imagine, a Catholic thing that you'd find in a bookstore. Plus EWTN's there, so, and Ave Maria Radio. Although I think Al Cresta's not going to be there this year. He's like kind of devastated because he can't come this year. So, I went to him and I said, guess what? I got you in the office. He's like, no! Because he's going to find fishing right instead of fishing dance. So, anyway, but it's going to be good. It's going to be good year in Chicago. I have some stuff to say.
Somewhere. And since you're both pretty high up in the Catholic Writers Guild, last time I checked, you're both officers, yes?
I bowed out this year to let some fresh blood get in there and do some things. So Don Mulcair is the committee coordinator now. This is a good thing.
Yeah.
My life's that crazy.
Selena was one of our first presidents, though. And first president, Selena?
No,
I wasn't president before you. You were president before me.
You sound like an old couple now. No, it was you.
I think you were one of the first ones.
Almost every position at some point or another.
I'm now a treasurer. I've kind of been working my way down slowly. But I was president for a couple of years. Actually, I was vice president, then president, and then now I'm back to being treasurer. So it's been a wild couple of years going up and down.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
We've been trying to stay involved with it. So, and we were founders, and we started this because we were part of a Yahoo group of Catholic writers, and we were all talking about writing and our frustrations of, you know, trying to get things done. And we said, hey, we can just keep talking about how we want to support each other, or we could do something about it. And if we harnessed our resources, we could do something. And so we got, several of us got together, formed the Catholic Writers Guild. That was, 6 years ago now? 2008,
yeah.
I think. Yeah, 2008 was when we officially incorporated and took our name and everything. But in that amount of time, we've grown to, 500 members, something like that. Not everybody's really active, but they're there and supporting, and our resources have allowed us to do the live conference, and the online conference. We have a wonderful program called the Seal of Approval, which basically it's to be a kind of gatekeeping for books as far as Keflosity. It's not so much a yay, this is a great book thing, as it is, you know what, this is a book that if you are a Catholic bookstore owner, you would be comfortable having in your store. And it's something that would enhance your inventory. And that actually came from the very first trade show that we were a part of. We actually just got invited to come and have a booth and that sort of thing and talk about the Guild. And so many of the bookstore owners talked to us and said, hey, we can't put this because, you know, we don't have time to read it ourselves. We don't have time to have a priest vet it for us. It's too bad you guys don't have something that would tell us, yes, this is, you know, worth having in our bookstore. So that's why we started the program. And that's been, I think, probably our best mission is trying to make the Catholic readership more aware of the Catholic books that our writers have done. And some of us have done, you know, some actual Catholic books. I wrote a devotional with my father called Why God Matters, and it was tremendously popular for when it first came out. And it was nonfiction. It's a little bit about his life as a convert and my life as a cradle-to-grave Catholic, and the lessons that we learned when God spoke to us in the small things in our life. And, but, you know, then I turn around and write about beheading zombies. So we have a very wide range of authors and interests, but it's been wonderful because we support each other not just in our religious work, but in all of our work. And it's been a great fellowship, and I've gotten so much out of it. I can really say that the success I've had as a writer has been, in a significant way, because of my membership in the Guild and working with all of the people. So, especially Anne.
Yep. You're a lot of fun, Karina. Keep me out of trouble.
Yes, you do that for me.
Okay, then. Now, Okay, well, I'm out of questions specifically designed for Karina, so. Well,
I can
actually.
Keep talking. You know me.
Yeah, actually, oh no, sorry, I just ran out of questions on Needle Life. I've still got like three other book series.
Yeah, but. It's true.
Yeah, you have more you can ask about. She's got more books on her than you and me, so.
As long as we're Catholic, shall we talk about nuns in space?
Oh, sure. So, hold up. No, wait. I'm sorry. You said it wrong. It's nuns in
space.
Anyway, so you want to talk about Catholic rescue nuns, or?
Sure. I think our listeners need a scorecard at this point. This was the first fiction that I ever published was it's what I call the Rescue Sisters universe, and it started because my husband and I wanted something to do when we were out on dates, and we didn't want to go and, you know, rehash what's going on with the kids and. We're very good communicators anyway, so it's not like we needed time away from the kids and everything else to discuss plans for life and that sort of thing. So we took a notebook, and he was interested in Artemis Society, which was trying to get a groundswell of just regular people working together to colonize the moon. And I was writing for Wyoming Catholic, doing a series about nuns. And we started talking, and we came up with this order of nuns to do search and rescue operations in outer space. And we've written a couple of short stories with it. And that led us to editing an anthology called Leaps of Faith, which has a couple of Rescue Sisters stories in it, and then two Catholic science fiction anthologies called Infinite Space, Infinite God, 1 and 2. And it's a fun universe because it's very big. It's a universe that I actually share with other authors. I have a couple of there are a couple of other writers of science fiction who have written Rescue Sister stories. And it's about these women who want to do things in outer space, either because if by this time they were born and raised there, or because they're longing to get off this rock, and because they are drawn to God. And it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. So their calling is to do safety and, like I said, search and rescue. Some of them are pilots of spaceships. Others are emergency medical teams with a specialty in space medicine. They've got engineers, the whole nine yards. And they do everything for food, air, and the love of God. So we've got several stories out. In addition to the anthologies, I've had a couple in magazines, and I have my first novel that, as soon as I'm done with a couple of stories that I'm working on, I'm going to go back. Some folks are beta reading it, and then I'm going to send that to a publisher. And in that story, three sisters, they are teams of three always, are sent to do the safety operations for the exploration of an alien ship out in the Kuiper Belt, which is out past where Pluto is, so kind of right in that area. And they will discover an alien device there that lets you see into your soul and into your deepest needs. And so it's wonderful because I'm trying to deal very realistically with the physics of working in space, with looking at the engineering and the mechanics and the things that we have right now, and taking those into the near future. It's only like 100 years into the future. So I'm not trying to just say, oh, hey, warp drive, that kind of thing. I'm trying to make it very realistic. And also getting to explore the future of spirituality in a situation where you've got like genetically engineered people who have basically become a whole other species because they were designed to survive in space. And of course, we know the churches take on genetic engineering. And so there's how we accept that and work with that. I won't give away any spoilers, but that does become an important issue in this book. And just the whole idea of having that kind of calling and that fantastic, exciting, sci-fi kind of life. So it's a lot of fun to write, and I'm hoping that once that comes out that on my list of books to write, which gets longer every day, I can do another book with those three characters, or maybe even like a series of stories with them, because they were a lot of fun. There's one sister and I think hilarious. Everything she says, we call her Asperger's. Everything she says, she phrases in terms of engineering or quotes from the saints. So. It was tons of fun because I wanted to make her a little bit confusing and yet perfect sense if you really thought about it. In fact, the minors that they normally work with call it speaking Annie's.
Okay.
And I actually had a beta reader who came back and said, I speak Annie's. So it was great. She got it. It was fun to hear.
Alrighty then. Oh, by the way, I should probably ask, since we're on Catholic Rescue Nuns, to backtrack a little bit to the Catholic Writers Guild, I know you guys will let almost anyone in. After all, I'm a member, but you want to expand a little bit on the membership, both membership qualifications and membership perks?
Do you want to talk, Karina, or do you want me to?
Either way, I can talk real quick, and then you can take it
okay.
From where I forget.
I'll learn through what you forget. Go ahead.
Okay. So essentially, we are here for writers who are Catholic, who adhere to the principles of the Catholic Church and the teachings, who are obviously not perfect, but at least practicing, at least making an earnest effort. We have had, you know, some members who were struggling in their faith, and that's okay, as long as you are still continuing to try. You know, and that's another nice thing about, you know, talking about perks, is that if you have questions or struggles or anything like that, we're here. And we get it not just from, you know, another Catholic's point of view, but also from a writer's point of view and a friend's point of view, and you know, trying to incorporate all of those aspects of our life. You don't have to have written a Catholic book. You just have to be a writer or an aspiring writer. We're not requiring publishing credits or anything like that. It's basically just writers and also illustrators who are part of the church and are interested in getting together with other members. We do have a small yearly fee or a membership fee that goes to things like the programs that we do, the live conference, the online conference, building our website, and trying to get other things. I've said it from the time we first joined, the thing we really, really need are more people who are willing to be active and put some time into it, too. Because so much of the things that we've accomplished haven't been so much because we have the money, but because we've had somebody who stood up and said, you know what, I will organize this and I will get this program up and running. Okay, your turn, Ann.
Yeah, basically the Catholic Writers Guild, what it benefits a person is to have a community there to help you try to make yourself successful as a writer or to learn and grow as a writer, okay? And I think, you know, there are other professional organizations out there. There's Mystery Writers of America, Romance Writers of America, there's Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America. You know, I was a member of SIPWA, Science Fiction Writers, and this is not to diss them or anything else like that, but I really didn't get much out of it. I really, you know, I was hoping for an organization that would help me grow as a writer. That never really happened. You know, they send out their bulletin, and they have their events where you can schmooze, but I think that was about all that I really got out of it. And I wanted more from that, from a professional organization. And there are other organizations that offer more, and I've certainly learned more from romance writers. You know, even though I'm not a really romance writer anymore, at least I thought I was to the point where I thought I was going to be a romance writer, and I ended up not being one. but I went to the conference, and the way it was put together, it was so well done.
that I learned. Basically, this is the way our group should be, because they actually try to cultivate the writers, and they don't require that you be published to be a member. So that's kind of our pattern. It's taken from the Romance Writers, if anything. And it's there to, for people to network, to learn things, to grow. That's why we have the conference that we do. And that's why we allow you FaceTime with publishers and stuff. That was one thing I forgot to say about our conference, is you can actually meet with the publishers. That's why we arrange these things, pitch sessions and stuff. It's because the only way to grow as a writer is to have a community behind you that's helping you learn to grow and become a better one. And that's the whole idea of being a guild. Like the ancient guilds, you know, you were kind of trained in your craft and then sent out into the world to go do it. but to bring back your talent and help cultivate others to follow that, that's the whole idea of the guild, and that's why we call it the Catholic Writers Guild. And that's what you get as a person who joins. Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. Okay, anyway, since I have two Catholic bright lights, would you want to go into a little bit of current events? And some of this is a little bit down the rabbit hole, so if you want to avoid it at all costs, I won't blame you.
I'm probably not real good at current events right now. I don't think I've even looked at a current event in a month, so.
I've got the news articles. I could just read them and ask for your commentary.
Okay.
Okay, if you want to.
Okay. Hey, I hear that this works on other radio shows, but fingers crossed. Something in the American Journal. It's a bit of a part two, so let me see.
I think I might have heard part one, so you go ahead.
Well, this is actually about the Vatican and the United Nations. Not sure if you've heard this one. Yeah, it's going to be one of those.
Is this the Catholics are picking on us thing?
Yeah, they're trying to tell us to do something.
Oh, well, isn't that almost all the relationship between the Vatican and the UN? But, so, it started off recently with the Convention on Torture and the... Well, from the American Journal, instead of the Church's fear that the United Nations would get sidetracked by claiming the Vatican was guilty of torture due to pederast priests, the United Nations decided to play another card from the standard deck of left-wing issues, the war on women.
Short
version, the really short version, Oh, yes. The United Nations is stepping up its attack on the Catholic Church's historic opposition to abortion, suggesting at a meeting on Monday in Geneva that it amounts to psychological torture of women. Well, I've got two Catholic women here.
Psychological torture. That makes my brain hurt. The juxtaposition of that. It's like, come on, guys. We've all gotten so far away from what, obviously, we have to revert to Princess Bride. That word, I don't think it means what you think it means.
Okay. So you're both saying that you... So you, neither one of you feel like you have been gitmoed or waterboarded or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
Sorry. It's like I don't get it. And I have this discussion with my daughter sometimes too about why women can't be priests and that kind of thing. But abortion, by saying that murdering an unborn child is wrong, is torturing someone. Wow. Okay. This is why I don't read Facebook very much for current events.
Wow.
It makes me wonder why the Vatican even bothers being a member of the UN.
I'm still trying to figure out why the United States is a member of the UN. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, but they're kind of, we have kind of having a choice. They're kind of in our backyard here.
Yeah, now we're kind of stuck with it, aren't we? It's like the neighbor you can't get rid of.
Right.
Oh, I don't know. They mentioned a while ago that the UN office building really needs to be moved or refurbished. How about we move it to Geneva? Sounds nice.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
I don't know. I think maybe they should move it to, instead of Geneva, move it to Medina and then see how some of this stuff flies. Some of this comes from the fact that we are becoming an increasingly pampered people. As I say this from it's beautiful new home, but I see it. You know, the less that we're having to deal with the real issues of survival and the real challenges of life. You know, and I'm not saying that the whole world is like this. There are places in the world that are still dealing with starvation and disease and real oppression. But UN headquarters is not one of those places. And the people who get to UN headquarters are not those people. And so the more that we are a pampered class, the more we go looking for reasons to feel insulted and upset and psychologically tortured. I don't wish for a black plague or anything, but it would be nice if we could all recognize what a real crisis is and then go, you know what? My life is really good. Let's concentrate on the things that we should be doing, like taking care of the real oppression and doing something about the distribution. And I don't mean, you know, overtaxing the rich to pay for the poor who want to sit on their butt with their free cell phone kind of thing, but I mean really dealing with the issues of poverty in places where poverty is an issue, and not just by, you know, dropping things there and hoping for the best and feeling good about ourselves, but why is this still happening? And there are plenty of places, and some things in the U.N. do that, and lots of great charities. Food for the Poor is fantastic for that. I mean, they go in, and the money you donate goes to not just to, you know, giving these people food, but helping them to farm and giving them farm animals and helping them to build homes that aren't going to wash away with the next monsoon and that kind of thing. And, you know, those are the people that get it. There's something going on in our world and we need to take care of it. But stuff like this, I shake my head. I go, why?
I mean, they talk about, here's the thing that makes me, you know, also wonder. Is like you said, they talk about the war on women, right? And yet there's a woman in the Sudan who, she gave birth today, you know, to her child. The only reason why she's still alive is because she was pregnant. Sudan's going to put her to death because she converted to Christianity officially or unofficially and married a Christian man who happens to be American. And here you've got, first of all, no one in our government trying to speak up for her. She's married to an American. And no one is you don't hear anything come out of the UN trying to save this woman's life either. You know, what are they doing? What are they talking about? There are worse things, you know, going on in this world, and they're coming and picking on us.
But we're safe.
We're safe, and also
we listen. Maybe too much. It's the, you know, who are you going to cry to if somebody hurts your feelings? The person who might listen and might do something about it. So, but instead of just getting told, hey, not your country.
Yes,
you don't have to live here.
Yes, Catholics are safe to pick on. We're not going to cut your head off crying Allahu Akbar. Well, at least not yet. Well,
that would be a bad
thing. I'd go for that. I don't know. I think that would make a great story. And, you know, granted, we've already had this one, what was it, Oslo bomber, where he basically, if you read his manifesto, he turned out to be a Richard Dawkins fan. You know, it's like Dawkins who Akbar. I'm like, really?
But I'm fine.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah. Hey, I'm sure that the woman out in the Sudan will eventually get a hashtag, probably after she's hung.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. You know, I'm going to stop right there, because if I start going in on hashtag politics, I'm just going to go nuclear for the next 20 minutes.
And then we'll have to hashtag Declan Nuclear.
At which point everyone's going to wonder, what's a Declan?
Well, hey, you'd be getting your name out there, right?
Yes, future mass murderer.
I think
of
that
America.
Would make a good bumper sticker. You should keep up with the show and then go nuclear, and then we could make bumper stickers that say Declan's Nuclear again.
Well, it's right up there with the bumper sticker I like that's, you know, nuke the whales.
Yeah.
There are some people who like to say nuke the unborn gay whales, but...
Yeah.
Well, it does cast a wide net of how many people can we offend. Oh, well, that works. Let me see. Is there anything else in the news I could get you to comment on? No, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the news, and it's just depressing me. But anyway, so what are you two reading?
What are we reading? Right now?
Yeah. Reading is,
all I'm reading.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, gosh. Go ahead, Creamy.
Good gravy. I started a new job at a company called Top 10 Reviews, and one of the things that we have to do every quarter is read a book from the Top 10 Reviews library and then do a book report on it, of all things, for our editor. And basically, it's the kind of... like a professionalization sort of thing, which is nice. And I just read this book called The Go-Giver, which is business principles, but it's around the idea that the really successful people, like, you know, millionaire kind of success people, aren't the ones that are the go-getters and the really, you know, greedy and what's in it for me and that kind of thing. Kind of talking back to what we were talking about, you know, that evil 1%. But in fact, they're the ones who are giving and are, you know, putting the extra effort into the stuff. And that's why they are successful, that they're also, you know, willing to receive the fruits of their success. And it was kind of interesting because there were, it's written as a parable, and there were like five main ideas of the business. And two of them really struck me, which the income that you receive is not just from the
Hello. Oh,
we lose
press.
You? Karina? Hello?
Hello?
Hey, there you are.
Okay, good.
Sorry. I don't know what happened there.
I just
wanted to have the big cliffhanger. I'll be fast just in case I get cut off again. But the idea was the income isn't just the amount of work that you're putting in, or necessarily even the value of the work that you're putting in, but the number of people that you influence. And so, you know, in the parable that they had, it was a woman who was an elementary school teacher was doing making up her own games and things for kids for her class, but she didn't want to just affect 25 people every year. So she talked with some software developers, had those made, and now she's in charge of her own software company, and she's touching tens of and hundreds of thousands of kids. And because the influence is so much bigger, and she's successful at it, she's doing well at it, her income rises above that of an elementary school teacher. It's not necessarily her job is more important, but she's touching more people. And I never really had thought about it that way. So I thought that was very interesting. And then the other one was that people, part of giving is being open to receiving as well, which sometimes is not how we get taught. It's like the more you give, the more you give, the more you give. That's what you're supposed to do. And not to be sexist, but women tend to get taught that a little more. But also that you need to be able to receive. And it's kind of ironic because I had, shortly after reading that, I read an article from Cracked Magazine, which is a fantastic magazine now. I'm amazed at the kind of articles they have. But one of the things they talked about was a study that showed that people who give too much actually are thought less of than people who give an average amount.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird, but they had done a study where they set up where people were given a chance to give a certain amount, and it benefited everybody, and you could give however much you wanted. And then they told them, well, this person gave this much toward the community pool, this person gave this much. And then they did it again where you could also take away from certain people. And the people who gave the most and the people who gave the least were equally dinged against.
Yeah,
it was weird.
Okay.
But, so that's what I read. It was a really interesting book. I highly recommend it. I'm making my sons read it before I take it back to work.
And
how
about you?
The Go-Giver.
What am I reading right now? Right now, I am not reading anything other than tests and exams and the play script that I'm directing. I don't have a book to read right now. But it looks like I might be reading yours real soon. My condolences. Yeah, it's sadly. Near the end of the school year, I really can't read anything. I'm too busy grading papers and stuff like that to even do that. But I hope that one of the things I want to do as soon as this week is up is I'm going to pick up one of Gene Wolfe's books. I want to read a couple of his books before I see him. I have read a number of them before. I want to go back and do another reread on his work before I see him again. I've only met him briefly once in person, and at the time I was like so in awe I couldn't talk. So now I really actually want to go back and reread his book so that when I see him, I can actually have conversations with him about his work. So that's going to be my summer project. Reading your thing, Declan, and then reading some Gene Wolfe. That's probably
going to be nice. Well, I hope you enjoy war novels.
Well, I guess I will now. I like war movies, so I don't see why I wouldn't enjoy war novels. So. And I have
Point
seen
taken.
All the war movies. I really have. I grew up with four brothers, and it was like that's all it was really, you know, especially Memorial Day weekend, if I didn't have a lot of things to do, which I did for this play that I'm directing, I would have been like sitting there just completely vegetative state in front of Turner Classic Movies, watching all the Moore movies. I like watching Moore movies. And The Dirty Dozen and, you know, Hellraiser Heroes and, you know, Guns of Navarone, you name it. It's just, I just like to watch it all day.
Ah, the fun ones.
Yeah, Dirty Dozen, The Great Escape, and that's what you think.
Yeah, I'm partial to The Longest Day myself.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. If only because everyone's in the bloody thing.
I watched a really good one the other day, Letters from Iwo Jima. Have you seen that one? It's directed by Clint Eastwood. It's all in Japanese. It's about the Japanese letters that someone discovered on the island of Iwo Jima, writing home that never made it back. Really, really interesting stuff.
Yeah, sadly I missed that one. Yeah, hey, it's one way to kill a Memorial Day weekend. How about you, Karina?
What did I do this weekend?
Yeah, for Memorial Day.
What did I do this weekend? We hauled an entire house. we packed up the moving van and came back and forth with all the trucks and everything else, and so basically we moved a family of six, everything that we could get out of there. There's three pieces of furniture that we just looked at and said, you know, we don't want you anymore. We're leaving them in the house with a for sale sign. And one desk that if the next owners don't want it, we'll go in there and we'll actually have to destroy it because we can't get it out of the room. But that was my Memorial Day weekend, and I am sore. But
ouch.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
So you don't have internet access hooked up in your new home?
Not yet. Not yet. Thursday.
Thursday?
Yeah. Thursday.
There's something wrong with that.
Yeah, that's what my sons are saying. What? No. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're in a room full of boxes. Don't tell me. So what were we saying again about, you know, we're becoming a very spoiled people? I know this, and I'm sorry, I'm just as guilty. My children are much more spoiled and privileged than I ever was. So.
Okay. Sorry, every time you talk about how spoiled we are and we don't know from survival, all I could think is, well, half the John Ringo novels out there, come to think of it. Oh, you both read him. Yeah. It's always interesting. I'm trying to figure out how much of him is conservative politics and how much is just straight-up logistics.
Sometimes there's not that big a difference.
Yeah.
Sometimes conservative politics is just, let's get down to basics and apply common sense, you know?
Yes, common sense, which is not so common.
Not common, yes. Very true.
Anyway. So, we got a few more minutes, and I have been instructed by the Dread Overlord, Daria, that I've got another musical number to go through. But that leaves plenty of time for either one of you two ladies to put in any final words that you'd like to get in.
Well, right now, Needle Life Zombie Exterminator is out in audiobook. You can get it on Amazon. Or you can get it on Audacity, if you like Audacity. You can also get it straight from the publisher, which would be Damnation Books. And, yes, I am working for Damnation as a Catholic writer. And it's been a lot of fun. I love playing with that
name. Why do they pick that name?
Because it's dark horror. Basically, she writes she's publishing dark horror, and I'm the oddball of the group, but... She loves me, so it all works out. She was not expecting comedy when
when she asked for the anthology. But so that is out. And other than that, if you go to fabianspace.com, you can pick a genre and welcome to my many worlds. Go and enjoy yourself.
You're very,
your turn, Anne.
Very writer. She's diverse. Is it my turn to say something?
Yes. Go ahead.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Murder in the Vatican: Search Mysteries of Sherlock Holmes is out, and that's available on Amazon. The Watson Chronicles, Sherlock Holmes novel and stories. It is not on Amazon yet, but you can get it from westexpress.com. And if you need information on my books, you can go to annemargaretlewis.com. For the Catholic Writers Conference, if you are interested in signing up for that, you go to catholicwritersconference.com, and all the information is there. Or you can email cwglivecon@catholicwritersguild.com. Okay?
Okay.
How's that?
Well, that's good. Are either one of you on Twitter, Facebook, that sort of thing?
Oh, obviously. Basically, just go to Karina Fabian on any of those, and you'll either find me or you will find a Spanish fashion expert, which is not me, or a tango team, which are not me.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, on either one of those, you could Anne Margaret Lewis. There is another Anne Margaret Lewis who is another author, but her name is spelled with an E, as of Green Gables type of Anne. I'm not the Green Gables type of Anne. My name is not a four-letter word. So don't get me mixed up with her. And she also writes she writes children's literature that has polar bears dying in the North Pole because of global warming, and I don't write that either. So it's Santa Claus mourning over the dying polar bears. So I don't write about that. So if you get the polar bear and dying in the North Pole, you know it's not me. I write. You know what I write. So, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll stick with the Sherlock Holmes. Thanks. Oh, Lord.
What does
anyway.
Sherlock think about global warming? We may have to put that if we ever do the Sherlock crossover.
Because they falsified the data.
What are you talking about? And, of course, Vern would be, that would be one place where Vern and Sherlock would be right there. I'm like, yeah, I know. Humans.
Okay. Well,
can't live with them, can't eat them.
Just can't eat them.
Oh, nuts. Anyway, I want to thank you both for coming. I want to thank you both for playing with me.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you, Anne, for coming in and covering for me. My mom actually made spaghetti on the grill. So
what? What was that, Karina?
I said my mom made a spaghetti on the grill, so.
Spaghetti on the grill.
That was pretty awesome.
Okay. Sounds fun to me. Well, no, I'm glad I was able to make it, and it was a lot of fun. And thank you for having me.
Hey, thank you for showing up. And if I'm guest hosting again, I'll be sure to drag at least one of you back.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right.
And if one doesn't, maybe the other will. Whether we were invited or not.
Whether we're invited or not, that's right.
That's right. We do that for each other because we're guildies.
Well, and I'll see you in Chicago-ish, and Karina, I will definitely see you around.
Yes. Yeah. All right. And thank you, Daria, for inviting me and for even having this show. And for passing the wheel on to Declan, because it was a lot of fun.
All right. See you around.
Have a good night.
All right. God bless everybody. Bye.
God bless. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Okay. So, that was Anne Margaret Lewis and Karina Fabian, both fantastic authors. I do recommend you look up their stuff. I am your guest host, Declan Finn. And as per Daria's request, or command, we have the tribute, I Carry You With Me, another something for Memorial Day. Good night, everybody.